X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date.
Hello and welcome to the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. I'm Aisha Rashid, Senior Life Science Journalist at xtalks.com. As March is National Kidney Month, we're taking the time to speak with companies and industry leaders committed to driving innovations and advancements for kidney diseases. This week, I'm delighted to have with us Dr. Bruce Culleton, who is the CEO of ProKidney, a late clinical stage biotech company focused on the development of a pioneering cell therapy candidate that aims to transform the treatment landscape for chronic kidney disease. Prior to joining ProKidney in 2023, Dr. Culleton served as Vice President and General Manager at CVS Kidney Care and also worked in leadership roles at Becton Dickinson and Baxter Healthcare. Before beginning his career in industry in 2007, Dr. Culleton was a clinical associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of Calgary. ProKidney's lead product candidate, REACT, is an investigational cell therapy product designed to stabilize or improve kidney function in patients with chronic kidney disease, with diabetes as the primary cause. The candidate is currently being evaluated in phase 2 and phase 3 clinical trials. To learn more about ProKidney and its therapeutic pipelines, let's turn to Dr. Culleton. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Dr. Culleton.
Thanks for having me, Aisha.
So I'd like to start off by asking you more about ProKidney's mission and therapeutic approach.
Aisha, we as a company have a mission to improve the lives of patients with advanced chronic kidney disease by delaying or avoiding the need for dialysis. We understand and recognize largely that patients who end up on dialysis have a very difficult life. Although dialysis is life-saving, dialysis itself does have a substantial impact on a patient's quality of life, as well as the life of their care partners and many of their family members. We seek to keep people off dialysis or at least delay the onset of the need for dialysis in many patients treated with REACT. REACT is our lead product, and it's a product that's developed initially by taking a small biopsy from a patient's kidney that's done through a pretty standard medical procedure in hospital. That sample is then returned to our manufacturing facility in North Carolina. I'll explain a bit later, but in essence, we select out specific cells, we grow those cells, we put the product through a series of release procedures, and then the product is returned back to the site where the biopsy was performed and re-injected back into the same patient's kidney.
And definitely, I'll come back to learning more about REACT, but I'd also like to learn more about your journey in the kidney space, in the kidney disease space, and how that's led you to ProKidney now.
Aisha, I've been in the kidney space for maybe about 25 years. A lot of my clinical training was in Canada. I was initially encouraged to go into the kidney space through several mentors that I had, largely in Newfoundland at that time, who were doing research in chronic kidney disease and dialysis and the impact and association of kidney disease and cardiovascular disease. Over a period of time, I became more interested in having a larger impact on patients. I actually loved seeing patients in clinic and really enjoyed an academic position that I had in Canada. But I did feel like I felt like I needed to have a greater impact on patient care. And that led me to industry. where over a series of several different positions, I ended up managing clinical teams on a global basis and developing products for patients who were largely on dialysis. I got to ProKidney after I left my role at CVS Kidney Care with really a couple of very important points for me. One is I had to dedicate my next stage in my career in preventing people on dialysis and preventing patients from actually getting to dialysis. The second part was relatively straightforward for me, and that was I really wanted to stay within the kidney space. I ended up choosing ProKidney for a couple of reasons, but one in particular was really the potential promise, the clinical promise of having an impact on patients who really failed standard of care and had gotten to a point where they were thinking about either the need for a transplant or the need for dialysis. And I saw the asset that was in development at ProKidney as a as an exciting potential way to have an impact on those patients.
And in your tenure in the kidney space, how have you seen things evolve, and where do you see things heading in the space? And you did mention the unmet needs in terms of the goal being to keep patients off of dialysis. And so, what other challenges are there in the space, and how have you seen those challenges evolve, maybe some of them being overcome? And how do you see the space having changed and continuing to change?
It's actually a really exciting space today. In the last 5 years, we've seen more innovation in the kidney space than we saw in the previous 20 years. With that said, we still have many obstacles and barriers to advancing the identification and appropriate treatment for patients. It begins with awareness. And 1 in 10, 1 in 11, 1 in 12 patients have some form of kidney disease. And about half of those patients, in fact, some data would say 90% of those patients are unaware of their kidney disease. So it really depends. Really, one obstacle is making patients and family members more aware of their risk for kidney disease and getting tested appropriately. And only then can the appropriate treatment be provided to patients. And that appropriate treatment, we've seen really an evolving, exciting landscape over the last 5 years with many new therapies available for patients and for their prescribers to provide appropriately to patients. We've seen progress and new drugs that are called SGLT2 inhibitors that prevent or delay patients from getting on dialysis and slow progression of kidney disease. We've seen others such as selective MRAs, and I think soon GLP-1s for patients who have kidney disease as well. There's been enormous advances in a type of kidney disease called IgA nephropathy, which at one point in time, there really was no treatment for it. And in the last several years, we've seen new products that are either approved or close to approval. We also have seen the advance of gene therapy within other disease states. And I think a real promise of gene therapy in some forms of kidney disease moving forward. None of these therapies are a cure, at least not today. Gene therapy may make a difference in the future. So we really do have an absence of a cure, but still amazing progress over the last 5 to 7 years. It's really an exciting time to be in the kidney space.
And can you tell us a bit more about ProKidney's platform? It's a proprietary cell therapy platform, and more about the company's lead product candidate, React, which you did touch on, but we'd love to hear more about the pipelines and programs at ProKidney.
Of course, React is an autologous cell therapy, and right now we're focused on diabetic kidney disease. But there's no reason to believe it can't be successful in patients with other forms of kidney disease, given that it may be addressing a final common pathway in patients with advanced kidney disease. So right now we're focused on patients who've lost 60, 70, 80% of their kidney function and have really failed standard of care. And I said that standard of care has evolved over the last 5 years, but there still are some patients who unfortunately progress to advanced kidney disease and are nearing that path to need dialysis or a kidney transplant. So what's unique about our therapy in REACT is that it uses patients' own kidney cells. As I said, we obtain them through a standard kidney biopsy. The biopsy material is sent back to our manufacturing facility where we take the sample, we inspect it, we wash it. The cells are then digested, and through a series of steps, we identify cells that have characteristics of early progenitor cells. And today we recognize that within the kidney space that there are about 55 to 57 different types of kidney cells with different functions. We actually identify some early progenitor cells, not stem cells, but they've already delineated sufficiently to say that they're going to be a kidney cell, but they're still a very early and have not phenotypically changed into their ultimate kidney cell. These progenitor cells are then isolated in our manufacturing facility. We expand them through a series of steps to encourage their expansion. And then we harvest them when they reach sufficient cell numbers. The cells go through a QC test, a series of QC tests, and put in the vials and labeled and are frozen. After all this, a vial will then be shipped back to the clinical study site for injection back into the same patient. We typically inject back into the same kidney where we harvested the biopsy. And then that same patient will get a second injection in their other kidney within 3 months. And we are within our phase two and phase three programs. So our asset, REACT, has not been approved by the FDA, but we obviously have regulatory approval to be testing this in humans. We're excited to be within, to have started our phase three program at this point.
And can you tell us about some of the early data that you have from your phase three or and even phase two studies, if you can share?
Yeah, of course. I can't say anything about our phase three data. Actually, I don't know what our phase three data looks like at this point. But I can share with you a recent readout from a phase two study. And I could talk to you about some data we plan on releasing from another phase two study over the summer. So our phase two study that just completed in December, so we enrolled 83 patients. It's a study we call 002. We enrolled 83 patients, and all these patients had type 2 diabetes mellitus, and they all had a kidney function of or an eGFR less than 45 mLs per minute. Some of them had pretty substantial loss of kidney function with an eGFR of less than 30 mLs per minute. Many of them had significant kidney injury. And we measure kidney injury like others do in the field by how much albumin is lost in a patient's urine. So we finished this study at the end of December. We are currently cleaning the data and will be undergoing database lock very soon. We hope to release the final results at a scientific congress towards the end of May in Europe, and then eventually present it through a typical, typical path of publications or multiple publications, depending upon which endpoints we want to highlight in secondary publications. We did present publicly an interim analysis in November. And in that interim analysis, we saw some very exciting information. One is we observe in patients who had the highest risk of needing dialysis, those patients who had an eGFR less than 30 mLs per meter per minute, and a high UACR, so those patients, again, with the highest risk of needing dialysis, we observed a stabilization of their kidney function. Particularly in patients who were randomized to initially receive standard of care, so no injection with REACT, who then after 12 months were injected with REACT, their kidney function stayed flat for about 12 months after their second injection. And these are patients that typically progress and will need dialysis over the course of within some time over the next several years. In a subgroup of patients who had an eGFR less than 30 and the highest risk of albuminuria, for the 12 months before they were injected with REACT, their kidney function declined by about 6 mLs per minute. And in this group, that was close to 15 to 20% loss of kidney function. When they received REACT, so they're crossed over to receive REACT, over the course of the next 12 months, their kidney function stayed flat. So in this high-risk group, we saw some very interesting, potentially exciting results that still need to be proven within our phase three program.
Sounds excellent. And so what do you see for, I guess, the future of a potential curative treatment, can we say, with things like gene and cell therapy? I know it's kind of preemptive or premature to say that, but why cell therapy for kidney disease, and what is the promise of cell and gene therapies in this space?
Well, I think the promise really for cell and gene therapies is in some cases, I guess, with gene therapy, it depends, but there's a potential cure depending upon the genetic cause of the kidney disease. Again, those studies are very early in certain disease states. For cell therapy, at least for us, we don't see this as a cure. The underlying disease state, so let's say it's diabetes in this situation that where we've got to focus, we're not curing the diabetes. We're not treating the diabetes. We're really injecting cells to help grow new nephrons or to reduce fibrosis or reduce inflammation within the kidney. So we're really looking at a stabilization of kidney function. And we believe certainly if you can stabilize someone's kidney function, whether it's at 35 mLs per minute or 30 or 25 mLs per minute, within the range where dialysis is not needed and preparation for dialysis is not needed, we believe that could have a substantial impact on medical complications, on how patients feel, on patients' quality of life, and even potentially on overall healthcare costs.
And so what are some of the short and long-term goals at ProKidney that you may be able to share with us? What can we expect to hear from the company, from you in the coming months and the next few years?
Well, in the coming months, we've got two big data releases that we consider to be important. The first is the 002 data I just talked about, the interim data. We'll release the final data hopefully in May of this year. And then sometime in the June, July, August period, we'll also release data from our other phase two program in patients with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And that's from a study called 007. And this will be interim data as well. But what's really exciting about this data is that this data will be the first data where we'll release clinical information on where patients are treated in both kidneys. And the 002 data I just mentioned, the patients were just treated in the single kidney. In 007, we'll be treating patients in the kidney that gets biopsied, and then within 3 months in the other kidney that wasn't biopsied. And in this phase two trial, we're also using a cryopreserved product. That's the same product we're using in our phase three program. So we really believe the results from this study will give us a window into our phase three program. And that phase three program is all obviously critical for eventual approval by regulatory bodies and commercialization. There's one other thing that I'd like to say about our phase three program. Up until this point in time, our endpoints have been largely focused on safety, and we feel like we've got a very strong safety profile on safety and efficacy. And that efficacy was measured by change in eGFR, which is an estimate of kidney function. And our phase three program, the endpoint is different and obviously more meaningful. In our phase three program, which is placebo-controlled, we're looking at time to events, and those events are onset of dialysis, patient death, or the need for transplantation, or a loss of more than 40% of kidney function. So, really important endpoints, which are closely linked with patient quality of life, and also closely linked with eventually the outcome, the more clinical and hard outcome for patients, which are meaningful to regulatory bodies and regulatory approval.
I also wanted to ask, what are some of the challenges, both from a development and from a regulatory perspective as well, in developing cell therapies, in general, and also maybe specific to kidney diseases? Because we hear a lot about logistical challenges in terms of you may need to have bridging therapies between getting the cell therapy or the gene therapy ready for the patient and those kinds of things. So how are things evolving and getting better on that front, or are those challenges still there?
So those challenges are substantial. I mean, there are substantial logistical problems. We are dealing with a patient's, in essence, almost like the patient's single product for that patient. That can't be, obviously, that can't be given to another patient. That's the patient's own cells. And the advantage of that is that patients will not need any immunosuppressant therapy after reinjection. But clearly, that transfer of that cells, that cell journey, if you like, that cell journey has to be protected and with very clear oversight to get back to the same patient. Manufacturing, I think, is also a big challenge for any cell therapy and gene therapy. It's a big investment. It takes time to actually build out a manufacturing facility. And cell therapy and gene therapy from a manufacturing and regulatory perspective is evolving. And the FDA is learning, as are many companies that are on this journey with the FDA. And because of that learning, there's a lot of back and forth, but also some unknowns. And we're working through, as are many companies, working through some of those unknowns with regulatory bodies.
Dr. Culleton, I'd like to thank you so much for your time, for being on the show today. I greatly appreciate it.
Of course, Aisha. It's an honest pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the end of this episode of the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. If you liked today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you all for joining us this weekend. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X-Talks on social media. Email podcast@xtalks.com or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.